It's not always about infidelity. It's not always about toxic relationships. It's about people growing apart.
Really, really nicely summarised. Thank you, Marius. Appreciate it. I've got to hand over to Ian, but thank you very much indeed for wrapping up that conversation. Wrapping up the show, that's it from me for tonight. We are out of time. I'll be back with you 4 o'clock tomorrow in for Thomas Warbrick again. Don't forget today's show on both Catch Up and Global Player and the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order that you want, pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Get the all new official LBC app for free from your app store right now. Coming up at 10 here on LBC, Simon Marks. Right now, time for Ian Dale.
Thanks, Ben. Nigel Farage seems to be on a bit of a political journey. He claims Margaret Thatcher is his inspiration, but today there was more than an echo of Jeremy Corbyn in what he was saying. He's adopting some quite left-wing economic policies and painting himself as the voice of the working classes. Is he, really? He's also painting the Tories out of the political picture and says he's now the real opposition to Labour. If you're feeling unhappy with Labour, would you turn to Reform UK? On Cross Question at 8pm, Ollie Dugmore, editor of joe.co.uk, political columnist David Aronovich, former Tory Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser, and entrepreneur Emma Sinclair. At 9, apprenticeships are being cut back for people who want to retrain, and instead, more money is going into apprenticeships for school leavers. Good idea?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a 53-year-old man is being questioned on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after a car was driven into crowds in Liverpool. Police believe the vehicle followed an ambulance through a roadblock during Liverpool's Premier League title parade. Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims from Merseyside Police has been giving an update this afternoon.
As with many large events, with event organisers, we plan for all contingencies. And this included the implementation of road closures to protect pedestrians, and an armed policing presence was also in place throughout the day. There was no intelligence to suggest an incident of this nature would take place.
Dozens of people were injured, with 11 remaining in hospital in a stable condition. A 28-year-old man has appeared in court charged with the attempted murder after a police officer was seriously hurt in a car crash. PC Christopher Miller was injured in Stoke Poges in Buckinghamshire last week. The King has warned Canada is facing unprecedented challenges as he opened the country's parliament. Charles told MPs in Ottawa that the world has become more dangerous and unstable. His visits being widely seen as a show of support in the face of Donald Trump's annexation threats. The Education Secretary has admitted that scrapping the two-child benefit cap isn't off the table, but Bridget Phillipson says the costs involved in reversing the limit means it isn't straightforward. Earlier, Nigel Farage revealed Reform UK would reverse its position by scrapping the restriction, having previously supported it. Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp has told LBC the Conservatives are sticking by the policy they introduced.
It's a question of fairness, and, you know, I don't think it's reasonable to ask taxpayers who work really hard, are probably themselves, most people are struggling to make ends meet themselves. It's not fair to ask those people who are working hard paying taxes to subsidise other people who've chosen to have more children than they can afford to. That's just fundamentally unfair.
And Adidas says customers' personal information has been stolen in a cyber attack. The company says hackers stole mostly the contact information of those who have dealt with its customer service desk. It's the latest business to become a target after Marks & Spencer, Co-op and Harrods also faced disruption recently. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 60 points at 87.78. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.19. LBC weather, rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night. Showers lingering in central areas with the odd shower for northwest Scotland, a low of 2. Patchy cloud tomorrow with sunny spells and the odd light shower for most. Turning cloudy and windy in the far west towards the evening, a high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good week. Very good weekend. I was just thinking, I'm going to ask everybody if they had a nice weekend and it's all gone wrong right from the start, Aggie. I blame you.
It's always my fault.
Just because you're sitting there, basically. Hello, everyone. It's 4 minutes past seven on LBC. It's Ian Dowd here with you until 10. Hope you had a good bank holiday weekend. I spent most of mine writing, but that's kind of what I do, so no surprise there. Now, Nigel. One of the lessons I have learned over the last 40 years of covering politics in the media is that you can't play two horses at the same time. And I was watching Nigel, to be fair, I didn't see all of it because it was very, very long, but I did watch some of Nigel Farage's speech this morning. And he seems to me to have gone all lefty. I know that's a weird thing to say about Nigel Farage, but he seems to be adopting quite a lot of the policies that Jeremy Corbyn had, some of which were, it had to be said, quite popular. Not on immigration, not on general wokiness, but on the economy, he's gone a bit socialist. Now, presumably that's because he's trying to pick up ex-Labour voters. He sees that as the path to number 10. He kind of thinks he's probably got all the Conservative voters he's going to get. So he's now looking towards Labour voters. And I just wonder whether they will really respond to Nigel Farage when he tries to paint himself as the working man's friend. Now, in Brexit, he kind of was successful in doing that, because if you look at the breakdown of the Brexit vote, huge numbers of people who had never voted before voted for Brexit. Huge numbers of people in the so-called C2D classification of voters voted Conservative for Boris Johnson in 2019. 47% of the working class vote voted for Boris Johnson. So there are votes to be had there. But if he tries to portray himself as a working-class person, that's quite difficult when you've been to Dulwich School, I would venture to suggest, and been a banker in the city. So does that ring true? And also, the various polls out today showing that Nigel Farage is the least popular of the main four-party leaders. I'd like to get your views on that. So the question for you this hour, do you think Nigel Farage and Reform really can win the next election? And are you convinced that Reform do represent working class communities? 0345 6060 973. Aggie Chambray is here, LBC's political correspondent. What do you make of this move by Nigel Farage, Aggie?
I think what Nigel Farage was trying to do today in his extremely wide-ranging press conference was two different things. So, number one, he was trying to build out his policy platform, because one of the big criticisms of Nigel Farage in the past has been he's Mr. Brexit. He only stands for a few things. He's trying to build that out. He's trying to actually show what a Reform UK policy platform would look like. And number two is he's trying to take advantage of the difficult time, the turbulent time the government has been having on winter fuel, on the two-child benefit cap, and on the changes to PIP. So on those two points, he's trying to basically outflank Labour. We know, of course, that the government has... Sir Keir Starmer has said that he's going to U-turn on winter fuel, but we don't know the details of that. We don't know exactly what that would look like. We do know now that Nigel Farage would U-turn entirely. He would scrap that. He would also scrap the two-child benefit cap. He also said that he would support a marriage tax allowance to encourage people to have children. But he also stressed he wasn't a religious...
Didn't the Conservatives try that? I mean, that's such a ridiculous policy. As if anybody's going to have extra children because they get 150 quid off their tax bill.
Well, he did want to stress that he wasn't a religious priest moralising. But he was also asked during this very wide-ranging press conference whether he really believes he could become this country's next Prime Minister.
History would suggest the answer to your question is no. Circumstances would suggest the answer is yes. Something extraordinary is happening. The collapse of confidence, in two political parties that have pretty much merged. I think the public have frankly had enough of both of them. I think the Westminster priorities have been hopelessly out of kilter with where most of the country really is. And I think, what I've said today is that actually this Prime Minister is maybe even more out of touch than some of the previous Conservative Prime Ministers. They want something different. They want a politics that is unafraid to stand up and say what it is. They want a kind of leadership that is based not on following short-term trends, not on being afraid of being criticised, but has actually got some sort of conviction and, I hope, some sort of courage.
You see, that's where I think he does have a unique appeal, where for people who maybe were pretty hacked off with the Conservatives, thought they'd abused their position of power for so many years, people who think that Keir Starmer has U-turned on virtually everything, don't trust him, those are the people that he should go after. It doesn't matter whether they voted Labour, Conservative or whatever. There is a real feeling in this country that people want something different. He can offer that because he's got virtually no track record for people to criticise. That's where I think he should be concentrating, rather than coming out with a mishmash of left-wing policies.
Yeah, it's interesting listening to him as well, kind of on that too, because we don't know. I mean, he announced these policies today, but we don't know what, for example, were he to become Prime Minister. We don't know who Chancellor would be. We don't know. He hasn't got that shadow team set up ready to go. He also doesn't have a track record, but he also doesn't have experience in government. And one of the criticisms that has been levelled against him over and over again is just, how would you cost this? The Conservatives saying today, being very, very critical of that. And one of the things he said before the general election too was he reiterated it today, he'd lift the level at which people started paying tax to £20,000. Now, the Institute for Fiscal Studies said today that would cost between £50 billion and £80 billion. So it's a huge amount of money that we don't know where that would come from yet. He has suggested how he would pay for other things. But that could be a big problem for him if he's not going to explain how he would do that. But he also claimed Reform is now the party of the working class. And our colleague, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, asked him why his party's MPs voted against the government's employment rights bill.
For workers to have rights, they need to have jobs. And if you bring in legislation that means fewer people will be in work, what have you done for workers' rights? It's all well and good making law for companies with 5,000 employees, 25,000 employees. What about companies with 3 employees? And this is the problem. The legislation never thinks about those, despite the fact in the British economy, it's the small private businesses that employ more people than the big CBI firms or whoever else it may be. So we opposed it because we thought it was very, very bad for employment.
Labour Party Chair Ellie Reeves has accused Nigel Farage of making fantasy promises and having nothing new to say. And a government source said of the challenge from Mr. Farage, who is more in touch with the working class? One of them grew up in a home where the phone was cut off. The other went to Dulwich College.
I don't know who he's referring to. Might be a she, I suppose. Aggie, thank you very much indeed. That's Aggie Chambray, LBC's political correspondent. Interesting WhatsApp messages coming in here. This one says, Ian, it's from Andy and Beckenham. Ian, I'm a Labour voter and I'd vote for you before I'd vote for Nigel Garbage. Well, that would be very brave of you, Andy, but sadly you won't have the chance. Let's have a word with Darren Grimes, Reform UK Deputy Leader of Durham County Council. Darren, very good evening. Deputy Leader of Durham County Council, eh? Who'd have thought it?
Strange things do happen, Ian. A bit like Nigel Farage becoming Prime Minister. It's going to happen as well.
Well, you never know. I mean, I remember last September I wrote an article saying I thought there was a 10% chance of that happening and mapping out the way I thought it could happen. I got totally ridiculed for it, as you might imagine. But now I genuinely think there's a 20-25% chance of it happening, because so many people have become so hacked off at the broken promises by the current government, and in addition to all the broken promises by the previous one. But are we going to find out now, with all these new councillors, with all these new councils that Reform are now managing, I mean, in 6 months' time, it could be that those councils have shown to be so shambolically run by Reform that nobody would want to vote for them.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, Ian. I'm a lot more positive about our prospects than that. What I would say is, you know, I've had this put to me so many times, and I would just point to Birmingham Council, in which Labour politicians have more experience than I've got years on this planet, Ian, yet somehow they've managed to send it into the depths of despair via bankruptcy, with rats the size of small cats walking about the streets. So I don't actually think that experience is necessarily a marker of good governance. I think we will be certainly shake things up. I've no doubt about that. But the good thing about Nigel Farage, Ian, and I saw this in County Durham, where I'm from in Stanley, which is an old Pick community, former Pick community, he sounds like the bloke in the pub up there because he actually listens to what they're saying and wants to hear what it is that they've got to say. Working people trust him, and that's why I think the political class absolutely detest him and why they're so fervent in their view and belief that he needs to be stopped at all costs. And I don't think that's going to happen because, as you say, the betrayal has been off the scale. The betrayal on everything from the winter fuel payment that we were never told was going to happen, at net zero with Boris Johnson, mass migration through the Boris wave and continuing, of course, reducing it in half, but it's still over 400,000 net migration to this country. It has been nothing short of betrayal. And the one policy that I would say he actually speaks many people's lingo on would be that net zero policy, because I tell you, the factory workers around where I am, and they are dwindling in number, they say that actually I would rather strengthen County Durham over the Chinese Communist Party. And I don't think that that's too out there a suggestion.
But you haven't got a left-wing bone in your body. You cannot be comfortable with some of the economic ideas that Nigel Farage is coming out with, because they are sub-Corbynite in some cases. You can't be happy with that.
Well, they're not sub-Corbynite in it. Which, give me an example, Ian. Give me an example.
Well, what he's been talking about today, for example, the two-child benefit cap, he's spoken out in favour of that in the past, and now he's flipping it. The winter fuel allowance, I can't really imagine that he thinks it should be restored for everybody, and yet he's now arguing against it.
Because you look at the stats, you look at the numbers of people that are choosing, opting to have children in this day and age, and the numbers are really scary. We're facing a civilizational crisis. You've mentioned on this show many times before, I don't need to teach my grandmother how to suck eggs, not that you're old, Dean. And
or a grandmother.
Or a grandmother.
Or indeed your grandmother.
Or mine. But the fact of the matter is that actually if you look at the way in which we are facing a demographic time bomb in this country, we do need to encourage people with every policy lever available to us to have more children. Otherwise, there isn't going to be a country that's worth arguing about, because there's not going to be enough people to actually replace
those
we're losing.
You think that giving people 150 quid off their income tax is going to encourage people to have more children?
Well, that's in the... You're talking about the marriage break there, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to people getting... Yeah, well, no, I don't think that in isolation would encourage people to get married. Fewer people are choosing to get married. But actually reducing the burden on the cost of having children would probably encourage people. You know, my siblings, for example, one of them has a child and they struggle and say, I'm not sure we could afford to have another one. They've only got one child in. This is happening up and down the country. And we need to actually be able to give people like my sibling the ability to be able to keep their head above water if they do choose to have another child. So even Suella Braverman agrees with this policy in reversing the two-child cap. It's sort of like a Chinese communist policy adoption in saying that we should only try and limit people to having two children. We don't need to do that, because actually we'll be facing the end of days, actually, if we continue down this path.
What do you make to the accusations that by going a bit left-wing on the economy, Nigel Farage is effectively becoming a prototype fascist? It's not me saying this. Lots of people on my WhatsApps here are saying this. Well, you have a sort of nationalist message on international affairs combined with socialist economic policies equals fascism. And there is something in that, isn't there?
No, there isn't. There isn't at all. Frankly, I find that a faintly ridiculous argument. You know, people in this country are angry. They're angry at paying more tax and getting fewer services. They're angry at waiting longer in accident and emergency. They're angry at watching illegal immigrants get better living conditions than our veterans do. And why shouldn't all of those things make people angry? That isn't showing Britain in the throes of fascism. It's actually showing Britain in the throes of an accountability crisis where lazy politicians are quangos running wild and a blob that's run Britain into the ground. If there is a wider call, a clarion call for Farage to come in and actually throw a spotlight on all of that and free us from the burden of it, then good. But that's faintly absurd. You are actually playing, not you yourself, Ian, but the people saying that are playing on people's fears, not Nigel Farage. That is an absurd argument.
But the problem is there have been various polls out today showing that Nigel Farage is the most unpopular of the four political leaders. So this narrative that everyone's really unhappy with Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch, when you put Nigel Farage directly up against them, he loses each time.
No. If you look actually at the polling that I've seen out today, it shows that the public believe he represents the working class of this country more than Labour do. It's in the name, the Labour Party. What do Labour represent if not the working man? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's religious sectarianism. It's student politics. It's divisiveness of the kind of which Farage is accused. What do Reform stand for? Well, for sovereignty, for security, for sanity, for lowering the burden on the working man, for secure borders, for energy bills that don't make you want to cry. That's not all too much to ask for. Any modern economy such as Britain's ought to be able to do those things. It's not asking for the earth to say that we ought to be at least trying to deliver them. Can you say Sir Keir Starmer or Boris Johnson did? I don't think so.
Okay, Darren Grimes, thank you very much indeed. Darren is Reform UK Deputy Leader of Durham County Council. We'll take some calls in a moment, get your views on just what exactly is Nigel Farage's game. It seems to be working, because if you look at the opinion polls, he's topping them consistently now, even if you put him up against all the other party leaders and he doesn't do quite so well, despite what Darren says. I've got the figures in front of me. 21 minutes past seven on LBC.
This is LBC.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million indeed.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes! Oh my God!
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
The legendary George Smiley is back. It's spring 1963. A Russian agent has defected in the most unusual of circumstances, and Smiley will soon find himself entangled in a perilous mystery that will strike at the heart of his greatest enemy. Return to the spy world of John le Carré with the gripping Sunday Times best-selling thriller Carla's Choice by award-winning novelist Nick Harkaway. Out now in paperback.
Yes, that's right. Big Motoring World is also Wow Motoring World because we price check our cars every day to guarantee you our best price, with up to 95% of them below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on what matters to you. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Ian Dale on LBC. Text 84850.
22 minutes past seven on LBC. Let's go to Munesh in Southall. Munesh, would you vote for Nigel Farage?
Hello, Ian. Yeah, I normally would have done so. I was voting for Labour pretty much through all my early life because I believed in their values. Then, when they changed, I voted Conservative. And now I'm stuck in a situation where the people that were voting Conservative were let down. But now they voted for Labour, which is what we've got in, and now we've got Reform in, and Nigel Farage. I would have given him a fair chance, but you can't just change your values at the drop of the hat. That's what he seems to be doing. you can change the goalposts, but you can't change the values. And all of a sudden, it's become a lefty. And this doesn't work. We actually need a right to control our borders, to control our safety, to make our country strong with growth. And none of these governments are going to be willing to do it. And at the moment, I've got no trust in Kimi Badenoch. So me as a voter, I've got nowhere to go.
So you're basically waiting for somebody, whether it's Nigel Farage, Kemi Badenoch, or who, to pick you off the tree, aren't you?
Yeah. So I'm a lame duck, basically. Come and get me.
Yes, but you are very interested in politics. We know that through your calls to LBC over the years. You're not going to be somebody who's not going to vote, are you? You will vote in the end. But what do you think that vote may come down to?
Well, it depends what happens in the next few years. I don't think so that Kimi Badenoch is going to hold her seat. So as far as the Conservatives go, they need a new leader for them to invite me and incite me to vote for them. So let's leave them out the window. My only hope was reform. My only hope was Nigel Farage to say, listen, let's stick with it. Let's go with it. But his mind is going with the wind. You know, just because Labour's failing, so, I'm going to go for Labour voters now. So let's go for the lefties. Yeah, that's not going to help our migration. That's not going to help anything. By the time he gets in power, if he gets the vote, because he's the strongest leader contender at the moment, we would have given up Wales to probably India for the steel industry, and probably Bradford in Yorkshire would go to Pakistan. I don't know. But
what do you mean?
Well, the way the current Labour government is giving up our country and our kingdoms, the Chagos Island is gone, Falklands will go soon, yeah? There'll be nothing left. Yeah, we'll just have England, or maybe just London.
I'll tell you what, if they tried to get rid of the Falklands, I think there would be a national revolution, and I'd be leading it.
we had Boris Johnson, and I don't know what he's doing now. He's just dropping babies like there was never any condoms invented.
Oh, come on.
But look, he made a mess of it, and now whoever took over, Rishi done a pretty good job keeping inflation down. But for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And Theresa May just really messed it up. You've had all sorts of mess ups. But why should we as a public be in a position where we have to vote for something where we just don't want the other thing? That's not politics, in my opinion. You know, we need to vote for someone who has values. Now, if you change your values at a drop of a hat, like Reform is doing, that's not something that I can confide in or believe in or vote for.
Okay, thank you very much. Chris is in Richmond. Hello, Chris. Now, I know you're a big fan of Nigel.
Oh, love the boy. Love the boy. Actually, I know he's probably quite entertaining on a personal level. But, I mean, look, I think you've made some very interesting points to Darren earlier on about his economic policies. The last election, I seem to remember that their plan was to increase the income tax threshold to 20 grand.
Yep.
Absolutely fantastic. To your average household, cleaner teaching system and paying income tax. Brilliant. But completely unaffordable in the current economic climate, point number one.
You say that, and I do kind of agree with you. But, of course, remember back in 2010 when the Liberal Democrats went into that election saying we promised to raise the threshold from 6 to 12,500, so doubling it. And that's exactly what happened during the coalition years. Now, a lot of Conservatives argued then that was unaffordable, but it happened.
Well, it did, but they also brought in other changes, right? They increased the rate of VAT, which obviously brought them in significant extra money. They made massive differences on stamp duty. I think the problem with Farage...
They just reversed it from what it... Labour had cut it because of the financial crisis. They just put it back to what it was.
Yeah, I agree with what I'm saying, but the point is, either way, it was bringing in more money here. That's the point. Whereas he is saying, right, well, last election, well, 20 grand increase. Now he's saying, scrap the two-child benefit cap, fine. But what is going to pay for all this stuff? Now, he's going to be, a lot of his councillors are going to be running some pretty challenging councils, for example, like Kent, like Durham. What is their plan for something like social care, right? The money has got to come from somewhere. Boris Johnson ducked it, Theresa May tried, but she didn't get anywhere. The Labour Party don't seem to be doing anything about it. That is probably one of the biggest crises in this country right now. Where is his answer on that?
Well, probably the same place as the answer of all the other parties. They haven't got one.
No, and this is the problem, though. It's populist politics copied from America. Blame immigrants for everything. They're all responsible because it goes well with people. But the other thing I would say, forget about his politics. The man does not like scrutiny. You watch him on television, he gets very shirty and quite stroppy and walks off. Right. Is this really someone that... Well, no,
you say that, but I mean, I remember I did watch some of the questions at this event this morning, and he did answer a lot of questions, and most of them, I think there was one I remember from ITV where they were really quizzing him on detail on a policy, and he came up with the detail. So he doesn't do that on everything.
No, all right, not every time, but quite often he has got... what I would say is I think he's very, very short fused. The other thing I would say that people need to remember in working class area... This is a guy that was earning 90 grand plus a month, and I've just fact-checked that on the BBC website, 90 grand a month at GB News, which is more than an annual MP's salary.
I'll tell you what, Chris, I know for a fact that's a lot more than he got when he was at LBC.
Well, I'm sure it is. But no, absolutely, but this is one, this idea that he's man of the people. He's gone to America 8 times, and I suspect that some of that, well, we know that some of those have been funded by other people. This is not a man of the people. Right, and I don't understand why people do not wake up and look at the detail. And I suspect come election time, the other issue which will haunt him is previous comments on Russia. If Ukraine is still going, I think that will actually play into Labour's hands, well, because look what happened to Marine Le Pen in France 2 years ago.
That might be, but I think this argument that you put forward about man of the people, you put Nigel Farage in a pub, you put Keir Starmer in a pub, you put Sir Ed Davey in a pub, you put Kemi Badenoch in a pub. I know exactly which one of those four people will gravitate to, and it will be him.
I agree, but this is the problem, I'm afraid, with politics nowadays. It's about, and it has been for a while, it is the style and your charm more than anything else. And Blair was brilliant at it as well. Starmer is a technocrat, he's a dull guy. But at the end of the day, what matters is governing. And I think your point to add, Darren, was really good earlier on. Let's see how well reform do in governing councils. Because frankly, the selection process of candidates have been shambolic. There's already been quite a few defected. There's some quite interesting, you know, behavioural issues to go into on some reform councillors. I mean, I think it's going to be a mess, frankly. They're getting better, but I don't think they've got anything like the professionalism of the other three main parties. That's my view.
Well, we will see. But you and I both know that the record of all three parties in local government has not been without the odd blemish here and there. Possibly Labour and Conservative more blemishes than the Liberal Democrats, I'll give you that one. But he's actually modelling his party constitution on the Liberal Democrats, because he knows that the way that you become successful as a challenger party is to be strong in local government. And whatever we think of them, they've made a very strong start this year with the local elections. As you say, we'll see how they do in running councils and then see how they do in next year's local elections. Chris, thank you very much indeed. In a moment, we'll have an update on the situation after those dreadful scenes in Liverpool last night, and we'll take more of your calls on Nigel Farage. It's 7:31 on LBC. Amelia Cox has your news headlines.
11 people are still in hospital after a car was driven into crowds at Liverpool's Premier League title parade yesterday. It's believed the vehicle followed an ambulance through a roadblock to access Water Street, where dozens of people were injured. A van driver has been jailed for at least 12 years after running down a 3-year-old girl in Manchester in February. A court heard that Rawal Rehman, who's 36 and from the city, had taken at least 20 lines of cocaine at the time. And the King has warned Canada is facing a critical moment, with the world a more dangerous place. Charles has opened the country's parliament in Ottawa at a time when Donald Trump has threatened to make Canada part of the US. LBC weather, rain clearing eastwards to leave a mostly dry night. Showers lingering in central areas, with the odd shower for northwest Scotland, a low of 2 degrees.
LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My Claim Group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Ian Dale on LBC.
7:34 on LBC. We'll come back to your calls on Nigel Farage in just a moment. But let's turn our attention to what happened in Liverpool yesterday evening, because a 53-year-old man has, well, we know, has been arrested after his car ploughed into Liverpool fans enjoying a trophy parade. He's been accused of attempted murder. He has been accused of dangerous driving offences and driving under the influence of drugs, apparently cocaine. Well, Liam Gotting is LBC's Northwest reporter. He joins us live from Liverpool. Terrible, terrible scenes, Liam. I imagine the city is just in a state of trauma almost.
Good evening, Ian. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think what makes this so hard and so tough for the city to take is that, you know, yesterday was, up until 6 o'clock in the evening, was one of the most joyous, happy, celebratory days the city's seen in a long time. Hundreds of thousands of people lined the streets. The sky was painted red with the amount of fireworks and flares that were going off around. It was really a sea of red all through the city. And like I said, I think that kind of made what happened at 6 o'clock yesterday that much more shocking and that much more upsetting for the people of this city. And you mentioned before, you're right, 53-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving and driving while unfit through drugs. And we learned this today at a press conference that was hosted by Merseyside Police's Assistant Chief Constable Jenny Sims. She described the atmosphere yesterday as electric, but said that sadly the joy of the day dissipated. She sort of took us through, you know, the events leading up to the incident. She described a robust traffic management plan that Merseyside Police and the event organisers had come up with and said that was in place. And we learned that the current belief of the police is that the driver followed an ambulance onto Water Street where the incident took place after a roadblock was temporarily lifted to allow an ambulance to go through and deal with a medical emergency. Here's a little bit of what the Assistant Chief Constable had to say during today's press conference.
There was no intelligence to suggest an incident of this nature would take place. And as we've previously stated, the incident is not being treated as terrorism. Following the incident yesterday, I can confirm on behalf of the National Health Service that we are aware of 50 people who were treated at hospital for ongoing treatment. Of those, 11 remain in hospital for ongoing treatment. They are all in a stable condition, and I am pleased to say that they appear to be recovering well.
Well, Ian, we heard in that clip there the Assistant Chief Constable, you know, reiterating that this is not being treated as terrorism. She went on to say that, well, she went on to urge people not to speculate about the person's intentions or whatever the case may be, or to speculate about the person that's been arrested. She also urged people not to spread misinformation online and not to share the videos that we saw circulating on social media yesterday. And earlier today at the cordon, the Metro Mayor of Liverpool, Steve Rotherham, criticised people who have been spreading misinformation on social media.
We're human beings and we're curious, aren't we, about how those things have come about. But that has to be separated from those people who want to use what happened for nefarious reasons. What we obviously don't need are people to be involved in this sort of the speculation about what it might have been about, because we don't know. And it's just let the police do their job, give them a bit of time and space to conclude.
And we also heard there, Ian, before about those 50 people that were hospitalised after the incident. That's a big jump from yesterday when we heard it was 27. But what we assume is that it was 27 who were taken from the scene to hospital. That extra 23 are people who have then self-presented at various hospitals over the last 24 hours or so. 11 remain in hospital, but the good news is, according to Merseyside Police, they are all on the mend and they are all recovering well. They concluded today's press conference by saying that the exact circumstances of the incident are still being investigated. But yes, just to reiterate, a 53-year-old man arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, dangerous driving, and driving while unfit through drugs.
Liam, thank you. That's Liam Gotting, LBC's Northwest reporter. Let me tell you who's on Cross Question at 8. We have Lucy Fraser, the former Conservative Culture Secretary, David Aronovich, journalist and broadcaster, Emma Sinclair, tech entrepreneur, who's the Chief Executive of Enterprise Alumni, and Ollie Dugmore, Editor-in-Chief of the news and entertainment website, joe.co.uk. Now, going back to Nigel Farage, Patrick says, in a reference to a comment I made earlier, Ian, have you been out on a night with Keir Starmer? I know people who have, and you're wrong. It depends which pub you're in. No, I haven't been on a night out with Keir Starmer, but if he's free one evening, I'm sure I can find a space in the diary. Sheila is in Church Langley. Hello, Sheila.
Oh, yes. Hello, Ian. Ian, how can anyone possibly vote for Nigel Farage? My Lord, look at the state of this country because of him. Look at the lies. Well, he probably believed in it. We're all led to believe in it, how great this country was going to be. But, you know, the man just led us all astray. I voted foolishly for him and Brexit. And you look back and you think, what was the matter with me? And look at the mess the country's in now, Ian. It's never been worse, has it?
Well, you know, I think you could make an argument that it was worse in the late 1970s, I think. I don't look at it in the way that you do, Sheila.
Yeah, because he's got the cheek. Nick, the cheeks come back again, start this new party, and once again, people are actually believing in him.
Well,
I mean, what's the matter
if the country,
with the people?
If the country is in a state now, it's for many reasons. Now, you're
Hang on.
You're attributing it all to Brexit. Now, you're entitled to your point of view on that. I don't agree with you. There are many, many other reasons why this country is in a state in many policy areas, and that is due to the incompetence of successive governments, their failure to run the country properly.
Partly, but, you know, he really started us into this awful thing, believing that about Turkey, about, you know, about immigration, about all the boats coming in, all that sort of thing. I mean, how can anyone believe in him again? I'm astounded
by
it.
I mean, forgive me, but he was the first one to spot the illegal boats coming over from Calais. It's not all one-way traffic. If you criticise him, you've got to accept that on some things he has been right.
Great speaker, we know that, and you know, very convincing, and he puts on the thing, you know, for the working class people and all that. And yes, he's very, very good at that, of course. Maybe possibly better than, you know, another prime minister could be at speaking, but you know, speaking won't get us there, will it? You know, and I mean, I would never vote for that man, good Lord, no.
Well, you kind of did, though, didn't you?
Well, I did, foolishly, because I believed, you know, you can get led astray, can't you? Believing in someone's convincing speaking and all that, you know.
Well,
I certainly wouldn't do it again.
Well, no, I can tell you wouldn't do it again. But I think you're wrongly heaping all of the problems of this country onto one man.
Most of it is to do with Brexit, whether we like it or not, Ian.
Well, I don't agree with you.
Well, we're all entitled to what we think, aren't we?
I mean, let me, for example, tell you that our exports from this country now are at record levels, including to the EU. So all of the disasters that George Osborne and people were predicting, they haven't happened. Now, people say, well, the economy would be bigger if we'd stayed in the EU. That's just a bunch of economists saying that. We don't know whether that's
true. Well, look at
true.
The prices of everything now, Ian. You
well,
know?
That's due to the Ukraine war. That's got nothing to do with Brexit. That's all down to the energy crisis and the Ukraine war.
Ian. I believe it's a lot to do with Brexit, definitely.
Well, believing is one thing.
You have our opinions, aren't we?
Yeah, but you also have to provide the evidence, and you haven't provided any yet.
Well, you know, we will find out, you know, but I can't believe it when I hear people go on that they believe in him and all that business, okay. You know?
All right. Sheila, thank you very much. Well, we've had Chris in Richmond. We've now got Chloe in Richmond. Hello, Chloe.
Hello. Hello. You normally do confuse me with Chris.
I know. And I did. I actually said to, I just said to my Chris here, why is Chris in Richmond still on the board? And he said, it's Chloe, not Chris.
You've done it to me so many times.
I know. It's my eyesight.
One day you'll remember me. My thing with reform is the NHS. A lot of the other stuff I think is flashing lights to make us look in a different direction, and the NHS is the biggest prize in for anybody. And they, whenever there's a criticism, they're very quick to shout free at the point of delivery, because it would go to some kind of insurance scheme, and they say somewhere in their policy document online, you know, it's quite simple: if you can afford, you should. To pay, you should. If you can't, you don't. But there's no detail around how that will work. So, for example, they don't say, does general taxation still contribute to providing healthcare for those who can't afford an insurance premium? For that, for one. The other thing that they say is that they are going to give tax relief on anybody who buys private health insurance. That sounds like a transfer of wealth to the ones with the most ability to pay for me. There is no. It might be free at the point of need, free at the point of use, but is it equal to the point of need? So lots of different insurance premiums in the States, because I've done a lot of research over that. They have different packages, and there are all sorts of conditions.
Yes, but why is it? Why is it, Chloe?
Hang on. All of this is never discussed. It's the small print, it's the detail. It sounds good, let's go to a different model because the NHS is failing and we're on our waiting list and can't get our, all of that is all true, and the NHS does need reform, but the only thing they're solving is a funding model, and I suspect that the funding model that they want to do will benefit those with the ability to pay and not those without.
Can I speak now?
Sure. I just need to say what I said.
Well, I've distinctly heard Nigel Farage say he wouldn't want an American model of insurance. He's quoted European systems, because virtually all European countries do have some sort of insurance model.
But they don't talk about whether you pay into an insurance. The French system, for example, you pay into an insurance and it's pooled, so that the healthcare is meted out in a quite a similar way to the NHS in many ways. But they don't talk about that. It's whether or not there is differential levels of healthcare received for the amount that you pay in. Nobody talks about that.
Well, we have that already. I have private healthcare, so therefore I'm on a different healthcare level to somebody who doesn't have it.
Sure, but that's because there's a two-level system, right? But on the NHS, if you are a 65-year-old person with cancer, you will get that sorted. Whereas in some insurance systems, it will be a pre-existing condition, and you won't get it.
Right.
You won't get it.
Yeah,
sorted.
But just on cancer, we have one of the worst cancer outcomes in the whole of Western Europe.
I'm not saying our system is perfect.
You seem to be more interested in the system rather than the outcomes. I'm interested in the outcomes. If a foreign system of funding their health service provides universally better outcomes than ours does, I'm interested in looking at that. I don't just dismiss it because it happens NHS.
I agree. Let's look at different ways of delivering better healthcare for all. But doing something like giving tax relief on those who buy private health insurance doesn't sound like sharing out our resources equally across the population to me.
Well, again, equality here, if that is the main driving force behind health policy, then I think it's a crying shame, because it should be about outcomes and getting the best outcomes of treatment in all sorts of different areas. And there aren't many areas where our country is better than other European countries. There are one or two, but there ought to be more. Chloe, thank you very much indeed. Jim says, is it Jim? Yes. You really are a Tory stooge. No doubt you'll soon move across to reform. Well, how can I be a Tory stooge and then move across to reform? That doesn't really add up, does it? Actually, it's Ian, not Jim. 7:48.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
A confusion, a puzzle, a bewilderment of U-turns, but are there some more? Is there another one on the way?
Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson joining us. It is reported that pressure is mounting on the Prime Minister to scrap the two-child benefit limit. And the commentators who are saying that this is driven by Nigel Farage and some of his policies to try and attract Red Wall or Labour voters, how would you respond?
But Nigel Farage has never been on the side of working people. He opposes the measures that we are introducing that will help working people. For example, our employment rights bill that will give more people rights at work.
He doesn't agree with the two-child benefit cap, Secretary of State.
He flip-flops on all of this. He's backed it in the past. And
doesn't your government flip-flop a bit?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Thanks to their unique boutique spirit, there really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million indeed.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes. Oh my God.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Here, Sandra, listen to this email. Felicitations and unalloyed joy to you. Could you help with a small inconvenience? I possess $32 million in an account belonging to my father, the Prince. We need an honest person to bank this amount for us. We're quits in, babe.
Some things are too good to be true. The Specsavers Too Good deal isn't. Get two pairs of glasses for £70. Include single vision lenses to the same prescription. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Quits in!
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Leading Britain's conversation. Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
7:51. God, they're all out tonight. Terry in Sussex says, you're not a Tory stooge. You're the worst kind of snake oil. Where do these people come from? They live among us, ladies and gentlemen. Lauren is in Tooting. Hello, Lauren.
Good evening.
Evening. What would you like to tell me?
Well, I've been listening to Nigel Farage for years, and it's just repetition, repetition, repetition. And another thing is, when you speak to the people who... He's been in politics all his life, but when you listen to some of the people who are in his party with him, they don't have a clue.
Well, it's like any party, some do, some don't.
Well, the ones that were all being interviewed, I thought, my goodness, I'd be as well putting myself
up. Well, don't rule it out.
No, thank you very much. And as for when I was listening to the other person, I've had private insurance for 40 years because I knew that I was a nurse for 40 years and I knew this was going to happen. If you don't have private insurance in the next 10 years, I won't say the word.
No, best not, Lauren. Well saved. Thank you very much. Quickly to Farhad in Glasgow. Farhad, hi.
How are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
I just wanted to expand on the points that various of your callers have already made. I think it's just a leave from the standard populist politics. Don't think there is anything exciting about what Nigel Farage has been saying. You can compare the narrative of the reform from any populist global party and you'll find the same narrative. They'll find one either a minority or they just use the same bandwagon and jump on it that all the problems are because of that particular group. In this case, it's immigrant. I myself am an immigrant, been in the UK for the last 16 years. The day I arrived, been paying taxes. I'm not even eligible to any benefit. I'm so glad about it, but that I don't need state's help. Been on a higher tax band for the last 10 years. A lot of it is because I've been getting good equal opportunities within the UK. I'm really glad about living in a country. I've hardly heard about Nigel talking about immigrants contributing to this society. It's always illegal immigrants, which I know it's a problem.
If you listen to Keir Starmer's speech, was it last week or the week before? He didn't have any nice words to say about immigrants contributing to the economy either. It seems to be catching.
I think they're just competing to match the most right-wing party, and I don't think they will, whatever policy they'll bring in. So if Labour is centre to left, or some people call it left, they will try and mirror what is being done by the populist. But they will never be accepted by the right-wing people, the people who are tilted towards right-wing. Even if Labour will try and do whatever the reform is saying, reform supporters will still not vote Labour, because Labour is not they don't have the same perspective.
Okay. Fine. Thank you very much indeed. Now, before we come to tonight's cross question, let's hear a little of the latest episode of the Where Politics Meets History podcast. And following the release of some research by Transport for London about a reduction in road deaths in the capital following the introduction of 20-mile-an-hour speed limits, my co-host Tessa Dunlop and I had this question posed to us.
Annie lives in London. She says, apparently, 20-mile-an-hour roads are saving a third more lives. Do you approve of more 20-mile-an-hour zones?
No.
That was a DM on Instagram. Thank you for that, Annie.
No, I don't. I think I'm perfectly happy to have 20-mile-an-hour zones around schools and maybe one or two other places where people, notorious accident black spots. But blanket 20-mile-an-hour speed limits are utterly ridiculous. Why settle on 20? Why not settle on 1? Because if you want to minimise the number of injuries and deaths, you reduce it to 1 mile an hour and have somebody walking in front of the car with a red flag.
A third more lives have been saved, including mine, because I walked out of a pub, darling, in Mayfair, engaged solely with my telephone, and I would have died had the car...
And that would have been your own fault.
It would be my own fault, but I'm really glad I'm still alive.
Well, so am I.
And I like to think maybe a couple of listeners are pleased, aside from all the ones that just, like, give me aggro. Do you know what I'm saying, like?
No, but do you not understand the logic of what I'm saying, though? Because there is always a risk. The moment you set foot outside your front door, there is a risk to you in one form or another. If we want to really save lives, let's abolish all buses, because if you go in front of a bus at 20 miles an hour, you'd be dead.
Do you know what's really interesting is the numbers of cars on the road has consistently increased and safety and deaths and fatalities have decreased in the same instance. It's absolutely insane. One of my favourite childhood books is Wind in the Willows, you know, with Crazy Toad of Toad Hall, and he gets in his fast car and he goes poop, poop, poop. And that was literally what it was like. The bigger the car, the smaller the road, the faster you could go, the more deaths. Staggeringly, it was the blackouts that killed way more people than the Luftwaffe, obviously, at the beginning of World War One. Quite bonkers. The King's Surgeon writing in the British Medical Journal in 1939. World War II, King's Surgeon writing in 1939 complained that, quote, by frightening the nation into blackout regulation, the Luftwaffe was able to kill 600 British citizens a month without even without even taking to the air. The number of deaths peaked in 1940 at 9,169. One person died that year for every 200 vehicles on the road. Today, wow. The figure is one in every 20,000. Two of my century girls that I wrote about, born in 1918, two of them have been knocked over by a car in the 1930s. Both survived to tell the tale. It's just what happened. Oh, you know, bit of a light dusting from an automobile earlier today. Modernity, eh? What? It's just brilliant. I mean, awful, but brilliant.
I got knocked over by a car when I was about 14 on Parker's Peace in Cambridge. And there was a bus, and I didn't realise there were two lanes of traffic, and there was a car sort of overtaking the bus. And as I walked out in front of the bus, which is stationary, I didn't hit the front of the car, otherwise I would be dead now. I hit the wheel rim, and it knocked me in the air, which was quite unpleasant.
Good heavens.
But I survived.
By 1930s, the government were legislating for anarchy. They still couldn't get their head around cars being killers. Mind you, we had the highest smoking population in the world. 80% of men at that time smoked in Britain. So we were all up for early death. There was a war just around the corner. That was just going to be a mere incident, of course. Arguing in a rather circular fashion that year for the abolition of speed limits for cars, which happened, by the way, the abolition of speed limits, the Transport Minister, Herbert Morrison, pointed out, and I quote, "There was not one of their lordships who observed the speed limit. And it is probably true to say that there is not one member of the House of Commons who observes the speed limit. I venture to say that as legislators, we are not entitled to enforce and to continue speed limits."
And you can hear lots more from Tessa Dunlop and myself by subscribing to the Where Politics Meets History podcast on Global Player and the LBC app. Coming up in the next hour, it's Tuesday's Cross Question. I'm joined on the panel by Lucy Fraser, former Conservative Culture Secretary, David Aronovich, journalist and broadcaster, Emma Sinclair, tech entrepreneur, who's the Chief Executive of Enterprise Alumni, and Ollie Dagmore, Editor-in-Chief of the news and entertainment website joe.co.uk. They are here to answer all of your questions. The number to call, 0345 6060 973. You can WhatsApp us on that number, text 84850, and of course you can watch us on Global Player and the LBC app.